Welcome to another edition of your favorite podcast. Indeed, it is Quality Hang. I'm Rod Brooks, and as always, I'm joined on this podcasting adventure by my partner in crime, the King of New Orleans, and he is a benevolent monarch. He's my homie, Marcus Osborne. What's up, man?
What's up, man? I appreciate the benevolent word. I love that word. One of my favorite words.
That's a fantastic word.
Love it. It just sounds so poetic.
You know what? If our rapper names weren't so ridiculous and we didn't name everything Young or Lil or whatever, Benevolent would be a great rapper name, dog.
Oh, it would be a great name.
Come on, I would go see Benevolent's show at Tip and Tina's. I'd go to that.
I sure the hell would. I love that word. That's a great name. I might have to steal that for somebody out there.
You got it, man. You absolutely got it, dude. Well, here we are, my friend. We are taping this episode of Quality Hang. Just to give you a peek behind the curtain, we are taping this episode on, what's the day, the 10th? November 10th, yeah. 2022. We are 2 days removed from midterm election day. There are still results that we are waiting for to come in. I believe the Arizona Senate race, as we tape this again, has not been decided. The Nevada Senate race has not been decided. And there are a handful of congressional races that are still up in the air. But for the most part, Marcus, what we have found out, I know to my delight and I'm sure to yours, that the red wave that was expected, that was thought to be something that Republicans would be able to count on to take back the House and to also take control of the Senate, that red wave absolutely didn't happen. And boy, oh boy, some people who have an R by their name, are those people upset? And to them, I say, you lit that clown, the former president, whose name I will not mention, you lit that dude take control of your party, and he hasn't completely finished it off, but he ran it into a ditch, and now all of y'all are stuck in the car. Some of you are bleeding out, and you're wondering, why, oh, why did we let this loser take control of our party? When you lie down with dogs, you get fleas, and right now, and fleas biting the shit out of y'all.
Yeah, this is it's a really interesting result. I didn't know what to think or what to feel. I didn't know how this whole thing was going to shake out. I was not expecting the red wave, but it still ended up being a better result than I could have possibly anticipated. So I'm grateful for that. But I don't know. I don't know exactly what we learned from this whole thing. I mean, there are a bunch of, I guess, conclusions you can draw from all of it, but I don't think most of them are actually good, other than the fact that maybe there's a little bit of hope for this goofy ass country.
Well, this country is deeply divided. It's 51-49, okay? You know, give or take a couple of percentage points. So basically, this country is split down the middle, the Northeast and the big cities around the country and the coastal areas of the West Coast. Those are staunchly Democratic. The middle of the country is red, with the exception of big cities, like I said, like Chicago and Houston and other cities like that. Florida and Texas are Republican strongholds. And I don't see that changing, quite frankly, in my lifetime, Marcus. California is a Democratic stronghold. And so these are things that we have known for years. My takeaway is, as I said before, and I'll mention his name just for the purposes of advancing this conversation. The Republican Party hitched its wagon to Trump. They were hijacked by Trump, whatever you want to call it. But they got in bed with that dude. And I told you this on previous podcasts.
Yeah.
His association with the Republican Party, not good for the Republican Party. And the candidates that he anoints, the candidates that seek his approval, the majority of them got their asses whipped. I know J.D. Vance won in Ohio. I'm not familiar with Ohio politics. I don't know how that happened. He won fairly handily. That's the one Trump candidate I know won. The others, for the most part, got worked. So I think that this was a repudiation of Trump's control over the party, because you look at DeSantis down in Florida, the governor of Florida, he and Trump fell out, and DeSantis won and won easily the gubernatorial race down in Florida. Another thing I think that we found out is, you know, it was black women who helped save the country 2 years ago. It was young voters this go round in the midterms that helped save the country. Gen Z, as they are being called, they voted heavy. They voted heavy on the issues of reproductive rights, whether it is access to free, not free, but legal safe abortions, or whether it was access to contraceptions. Young voters came out big, big, big for that. So to me, those were the two takeaways, the two positive takeaways in my mind from the midterms.
I just have a bunch of mixed emotions about all this stuff. Ohio, sadly enough, it used to be a very, very purple state. Or as they used to say, as Ohio goes, so goes the country. Mm-hmm. Ohio has become pretty red.
Yeah, very red, with the exception of the cities. But once you get outside Cleveland, Cincinnati, and Columbus, and Dayton, Ohio is red, red, red.
It's weird, man. I think for me, sort of the most disheartening thing, in spite of the fact that it wasn't the drubbing that many on the right expected, it still left me with the feeling that, wow, we haven't learned anything. The fact that Lauren Boebert still has the opportunity to win that seat is crazy to me. The fact that Marjorie Taylor Greene won in a landslide, the fact that Ron DeSantis won Miami-Dade County, it's shocking to me. So there are a bunch of weird, I think, demographical changes occurring in the country. So that's maybe sort of screwing around with history and historic voting patterns. But it definitely concerns me. Like, Herschel Walker still has, he's going to be in a runoff. This is insane to me. And I said this before on this podcast, Rod, and actually a couple of people hit me up after they heard him, like, dude, what are you talking about? You sound like a radical. But I said that I don't think that most white people are racist, but I do believe that most white folks are okay with a little bit of racism. And I think that these election results kind of bear that out. When you look at the fact that white folks, the majority of white folks in this country, vote Republican, vote conservative. And I'm not talking small. More than 70% of white men, more than 70% of white women vote Republican. It seems incredible to those of us who are from the Bay Area that that would ever happen. But I think if you're a person from the South, it shouldn't shock you. So you have that going on. And then you have the fact that minorities, unfortunately, do not vote. Do not vote. The voting numbers for black folks, for Latinos, et cetera, numbers are disgustingly low. We just don't turn out. And there's a lot of reasons for that. A lot of that shit is, you know, societal, and there's a lot of cynicism and pessimism about the system itself. But there's that cycle where we'll sit here, we'll complain about the system. But unfortunately, the only way to change the system is to be involved in the system. So there's this weird, you know, self-perpetuating cycle of cynicism. I don't know. I'm numb to it in many respects. I hope things turn out for the better. I'm not super duper encouraged, though.
Well, here's my thing. The people of Marjorie Taylor Greene's district are fucking stupid. I mean, that's all it boils down to.
Sure.
Stupid. More than likely, they're racist. I mean, we're talking rural Georgia, so, you know, more than likely, they don't harbor the most positive and intelligent thoughts when it comes to people of color, particularly African Americans. Yeah. You know, stupid people are going to do stupid shit.
Yeah.
And, you know, the race in Colorado with old girl Boebert is tight. But again, we're talking rural Colorado. And these people love their guns, and when you run on that, and when you run on Washington is corrupt and they don't care about you. I mean, that's a pretty old story. And that tale had been told many times around districts all over this nation. So to me, it's, you know, it's not surprising. They are just the loudest, shiniest idiots. Yeah. You have other idiots who are just like them who just aren't as loud and as shiny with it. You know, Texas and Florida, I mean, you're talking, you know, Texas now is going on 30 years of Republican control. It is deep seated. It is there. And yeah, you look at situations like the, you know, Texas overwhelmingly voted for Greg Abbott, who has overseen, you know, Texas being without power for 2 weeks and, you know, mass shootings and things of that nature.
Yeah.
It is disheartening, but the people of Texas, who are very, in their minds specifically, very iconoclastic, they like that way of life. And it is disheartening to see that in Uvalde, you know, where the most recent horrific school shooting took place, they overwhelmingly, like 74% of them voted for Greg Abbott. So it is disheartening to see that. But we are talking about places, again, Texas and Florida, that have been Republican strongholds for years. And, you know, Texas, I understand, you know, growing up there, have lived there, obviously still have family there. You know, I get Texas politics. Yeah. Florida, I just don't get it. But I think it's similar to Texas. And like I said, I think it's similar to California, even though California leans Democratic. When there is a political standard that has been set in certain places, like New York is Democratic, it's going to be hard to break that. And when people there are okay with their governance, they are okay with their status quo, they are going to vote and vote heavy to keep that. So to me, what we saw specifically in Texas and in Florida, to me, it wasn't a surprise. I'd been saying anybody who would listen, and people would, you know, would say that I was just being, you know, I wasn't being optimistic. And Beto was never going to win in Texas.
Yeah,
it wasn't going to happen. Nope. He wasn't gonna, it just and I knew that, you know, when he ran against Ted Cruz, and I knew it was going to happen this time because. Yeah. Democrats are just not going to win statewide office in Texas. They're just not. Like, Democrats are not going to win statewide office in Florida. They're just not. Now, Georgia, Herschel Walker still hasn't won, and I still don't think he's going to win. I was stunned that it went to a runoff, and I was stunned that Stacey Abrams got beaten as badly as she did by the Republican incumbent Governor Brian Kemp. That to me was stunning. Yeah, and Georgia, I don't know what the hell's up with that.
Well, you know, one of the superpowers of the right is that they, for better or worse, they coalesce. They sit together and they don't break ranks at all, which is, I think, one of the things that the folks on the left need to start learning how to do. But the thing is the thing that is best about the Democratic Party, which is thought diversity, it's the thing that kills the party when election time rolls around, because nobody can ever go, you know what? I just think that they're more interested in fighting fair and being good people. And then one day they're just going to have to learn that you can't fight fair and be good people when you play in this political game. If you're trying to win, you're trying to win. You got to do the things that it takes to win. And sometimes, I mean, I feel like they should know this by now, is you're going to have to get a little bit dirty. And that means maybe supporting your own version of Herschel Walker. Like, there's not a chance in hell Herschel Walker could have run as a Democrat. Not a
No, because I think the reason that will never happen is, well, but Democrats would never look at Herschel Walker the way Republicans are looking at Herschel Walker, which is Republicans look at Herschel Walker as a useful idiot because, well, he's a useful idiot. Not saying that Democrats are perfect, not saying that Democrats are without flaw, not saying that Democrats are saints, but it would be harder for the Democratic Party as a whole to get behind putting someone out there who is a useful idiot, who is someone out there who is clearly unqualified. It would be harder for the Democratic Party and its voters to look at that and go, that's the guy we want. But on the flip side, the Republican Party, because their desire for total control and power is so naked and so craven, they look at that and go, because it's all cynical. They put up another black man to go against a black man, knowing full well that their black man is 100% not qualified.
Right.
But again, because they are so craven in their desire for power, to them, it didn't matter. We got ourselves one of them.
Yep.
He's a useful idiot. Let's run him up there. And if it doesn't work, well, we tried. If it does work, holy shit, can you believe we pulled it off? So that type of situation will never happen in the Democratic Party, because you just don't have that same mindset. And I don't think we'll ever, that the Democratic Party will ever have that mindset, because it would be dead on arrival.
Yeah,
it just
man.
Simply wouldn't fly.
And you think about how the right has managed to literally demonize the folks on the left, the folks who are liberal or lean left, literally managed to demonize these folks to the point where these people in these rural cities, these rural areas, will literally vote against their own self-interest. Because we've seen numbers, we've seen statistics where individual points from Democratic platforms are shown to them, and they give them the opportunity to vote on these, yay or nay, and they love them. But they will vote against it just because it's coming from a Barack Obama. So, like, Obamacare, they hate it. It's socialism. But guess what? They sure do love it once they fucking get it.
Yeah, but what if their interests are beyond healthcare? What if their interests are beyond, let's just say, free and fair elections?
Yeah.
What if their interests are control over women's bodies? What if their interests are authoritarianism? What if their interests are fascism?
Yeah.
What if their interests are rolling back protections for people of color, for gays, lesbians?
Yes.
If that is your MO, if that's what you're down with, if that's what your interests are, and the Republican Party is saying, hey, listen, we are the folks that will 100% totally serve your interest, you'll vote for that and go, healthcare, whatever, I'm fine. The Lord Jesus Christ is going to take care of me.
Yeah, or no, that's socialism. I don't need anybody to give me that. But you really do, though. You really do. You really fucking do. The next time one of these cats talks about, well, things were so much greater back in such and such day, I'm like, for who?
Oh, yeah, for them. They know what they're talking about. It's not coded language. They know, for them, for white people. They know.
For who, dude?
I know.
I don't know. It just, again, I hate to sound cynical. It seems to me like we've gotten past the point where you could actually have reasonable and open debate and conversation about issues that matter to people. The right has become so consumed with the thing that they always bitch about identity politics, when they're the ones who play it constantly.
Are you telling me that the Republican Party and people who lean Republican, they can actually not be honest and truthful about things? No, not those people. No, they all seem to be so upset. I will say this, and I don't think I'm being a prisoner of the moment here. The Republican Party knows it's in trouble. They know that the Trump years are not working out for them. Having a bunch of election deniers running for office, and that being part of your party's get down, that didn't work for them. They know that young voters are not feeling what the Republican Party is saying, what the Republican Party is about. They know that they are in trouble. And, you know, they talked about the red wave and this, that, what they thought they were going to have themselves a good night. They thought they were going to be well on their way to total control of the legislative, the judicial, and eventually in 2024, the executive branch, and they could go full fucking fascist. They thought last night was going to be their opportunity to smash on the gas. Not last night, a couple of nights ago was going to be their opportunity to smash on the gas, and they got punched in the mouth. And now they're looking around going, what do we do? And that Trump dude is still there. He's not going anywhere unless he goes to jail. So he's going he's going to take as many people down as he can with him. He's going to try and burn it down if they pivot away from him. They got themselves into this abortion mess. So how do they climb out of it? Without alienating that part of the Republican base, they don't know how to do that. And they don't know how to talk to and how to court the young voters that are down with left-leaning or progressive ideas like student debt forgiveness, like marijuana legalization across the country, like absolutely codifying abortion rights and the ability to keep the government out of your bedroom, out of your uterus. The Democratic Party is always going to be the party of gay people can get married. We are not going to get in your business. That's what young people are down with. The Republican Party is on the opposite end of the spectrum on every single one of those things I just mentioned and other things that I haven't mentioned. And how the Republican Party pivots to those ideals to get the young voters that overwhelmingly voted democratically in these midterm elections, they gonna be able to do that in 2 years? I doubt it. I doubt it. So I understand your cynicism, Marcus. I completely and totally do. But I'm just looking at what happened a couple of nights ago and who these people are and what they don't have available to them right now. And I look and I go, these cats is cooked. I'm not saying that they're going any way. I'm not saying that they've been neutered. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying that they're not dangerous. They are. But I'm thinking as a long-term viable party, nah, man, I just don't see it.
Well, I just hope that they get the Democrats get their shit together soon, because what's the scariest part of all of this, in spite of all the other stuff, the scariest part of this stuff is the fact that every single election cycle, they peel off a little bit more of that Democratic coalition. They peel off a few more educated white folks, a few more black folks, a few more Latinos, a lot more Latinos. They just keep the gay population, the LGBTQ community, peeling off a few more. Matter of fact, one of these guys just got elected to Congress. The log cabin Republican dude. So it's weird, and I just hope that we get our stuff together soon before we don't permanently get stuck on this trajectory.
Yeah, man. Yeah, I mean, it's the fight is going to continue. And more than likely, it's going to get uglier. It's going to get nastier. And you will get to this point 2 years from now and be like, what the hell is going on? But as it stands right now, I'm not saying that democracy was saved, but it seemed like we were careening headlong into Republican authoritarianism / fascism.
Yes,
and
sir.
At least for now, it hasn't been stopped, but it's been slowed down. And, and that's a whole lot better than how we were feeling. When I say we, the royal we, how we were feeling a week or two ago. All right, let's get to some fun stuff, shall we? The world owes sports.
Yeah, and, man.
Is your boy Rod B still feeling good? Feeling good, feeling great. How are you? Yes, I woke up this past Sunday morning, and to me as a sports fan, it's the best feeling in the world, Marcus, when you can wake up and your first conscious thought is, my team just won a championship.
Yeah.
And I woke up Saturday morning and my first thought was, damn, man, the Astros won the World Series again. But here's what makes Sunday morning for me even better. Not only was my first thought, the Astros just won the World Series, my second thought was, damn, LSU beat Alabama on the exact same night. Yeah, baby. Go Tigers. That's what I'm talking about. I told you the Astros were going to win. I told you they was going to win in six. I told you Dusty was going to get that championship.
I can't tell you. I can't even express to you how much that meant to me, just on a personal level, that Dusty was able to get that thing. You know what, dude? I got to thinking about the Astros. How many times they've been to the World Series now in the past few years?
Two times. Past few years. Hang on. So 2017,
four?
This year, last year, and the series they lost to the Washington Nationals. So four.
four, and they've won two of them. I mean, it just feels like these dudes are probably going to be there again next year. I just don't see any reason who's going to stop them. I just don't see anybody coming up and beating them. At least, put it this way, I don't see anybody being really, really real competition to them if they stay healthy and all things being equal.
Oh no, absolutely. They are without a doubt built to last for sure. I mean, I'm optimistic about next season as much as I can think about next season, considering last season just ended.
Yeah.
less than a week ago.
I thought about it because I feel there's a very warrior quality to the Astros. In that, here's a team that for years pretty much no one gave a shit about. Everybody kind of, it was an afterthought. Sure. And every now and then they'd pop up and they'd have a good team or something. But generally speaking, nobody really gave a fuck about them. Nobody took them seriously. And now, every season, these dudes have to be taken serious. Mm-hmm. Every season, you have to account for the Houston Astros. 10 years ago, there's not a chance in hell you'd be sitting here going, we got to worry about these Astros. Not a chance. And it's the same thing with these Warriors. Like 10 years ago, not a fucking chance. But now, like if the Astros aren't really, really good next year, everybody's going to be shocked, and for good reason. It's just an interesting parallel. And I like when these things happen because it shakes the sports world up. Because as much as I love sports, and one of the things that's kind of good and bad is you have teams that are sort of grandfathered in. You have these teams that are kind of always a part of the mix. But it's always fun when these teams pop up and just kind of shake this whole shit out.
Now, you are 100% correct with the Warrior-Astro comparison, parallel, whatever you'd like to call it. Matter of fact, I've had this conversation with several people over the last few days, you know, here in the Bay Area, mm-hmm. that the Warriors and the Astros, you know, the 70s and the 80s, and even portions of the 90s were laughingstocks. They were absolutely terrible. And for these two downtrodden for years franchises, for the Warriors and the Astros to be the gold standard where teams want to be like them, teams hate them, fan yep. bases hate them yep. because they keep being beaten by these guys. Mm-hmm. Hey, man, if you were to tell 12-year-old Rod Brooks back in the day that the Astros and the Golden State Warriors would be the class of their respective sports, and it would, like, what are you talking about?
That's insane.
It's absolutely insane. The Warriors and the Astros are doing things that people have for years said, only the Yankees and the Lakers can right. do because right. the Yankees and the Lakers did it, but right. they did it back in the 80s for the Lakers and the 2000s. For the Yankees, it was the 50s and a little bit of the 60s and then the 2000s. But now the Lakers, ha ha ha, because they're terrible, and the Yankees, who just got curb stomped by the Astros in the
wow.
LCS, they right now are looking around going, for the Lakers, they're just trying to, you know, they're trying to get their head above water. And for the yeah. Yankees, they're just trying to figure out how they got to figure out if they're going to keep Aaron Judge. But even yep. if they do keep him, how in the hell do we keep beat these Astros who have eliminated the Yankees from the postseason more than any other team in Major League Baseball history?
Crazy.
The
dude.
Astros are the team that have taken the big bad Yankees out the most in the postseason.
It's crazy.
That is fucking wild. I will say this about both teams, though, the Yankees, or the Astros and the Warriors. Their ascendance to the top started with drafting two guys that nobody, and yeah. I mean nobody, I don't care who you are, mm-hmm. thought that these two guys would not only be the best players on their respective teams, but two guys who are going to go into the Hall of Fame,
yeah.
one of them in Steph Curry being a generational player. The Astros getting Jose Altuve, drafting him.
Yep.
And he's been the one constant through all of their World Series appearances.
Yep.
And the Warriors drafting and developing, and Steph Curry developing his game to being the player that he is. If the Warriors don't get Curry and the Astros don't have Jose Altuve, we are not having either one of these conversations about either one of these teams.
And, you know, we had a bit of this in the conversation last week. We talked about the underrated and underappreciated aspects of coaching. But the other part to that equation is ownership means so very much to a winning franchise. If you have a shitty owner, you can – it's no matter how many great players you have, no matter how many good coaches you have, if your ownership group sucks, you're going to ultimately suck. You can trace it back to the best owners in the game, any professional sport, and those owners typically have really good teams. That's why I'm not worried about when Steph Curry leaves the Warriors. They probably years down, but I have faith in Joe Lacob that he's going to do the right thing and make sure these dudes stay on top. I feel like the same thing is going to happen with the Astros. It's happened with the fucking Patriots. The great teams have great ownership. Miami, the Miami Heat are a great example of great ownership. And for years, the Lakers, a great example of great ownership.
Let me say one last thing about the Astros before we move on. You know, I was saying to a friend of mine that the Astros across the board, across the country, are not looked upon favorably due to the cheating scandal. I get it. I think a lot of it is you know, kind of BS, sour grapes, because you know, they you know, this championship was just a bunch of cheaters. Like,
of course,
the vast majority of the people who were on that 17 team that beat the Dodgers in the World Series, that were part of that cheating scandal, aren't on that team anymore, except for Jose Altuve. And Bregman, and Lance McCullers Jr. came back. So really, you're just talking about Altuve and Bregman. But again, you know, whatever. The Astros, for a lot of people who are baseball fans, are disliked.
Yep.
Well, but did you notice, though, that there were a bunch of people who said, I hate the Astros, but I'll root for them in the World Series.
Uh-huh.
And they did that for one reason, for one man. They did it for Dusty Baker.
Yes,
and
sir.
Dusty Baker, and this is how beloved Dusty Baker is. Dusty Baker is the only person on the planet. Dusty Baker is the only person in baseball that can make baseball people who hate the Astros for reasons, okay, I'll say it, for reasons they feel are understandable, but he's the only guy that can make people who hate the Astros go, I'll root for him because I like Dusty. That's how beloved Dusty Baker is. There's not another person in Major League Baseball who could have pulled off that magic trick, if you catch what I'm saying.
You know what? You made a point about people kind of sort of taking away from the Astros winning. First of all, great point about Dusty Baker. Incredible point about Dusty Baker. But it's interesting because I think this is because, again, just like with the Warriors, another parallel, I think, is as soon as one of these teams pops up, immediately people come out of the woodwork to sort of try to discredit what they've done. Right? So from my standpoint, these Astros, this is a dynastic squad. Right? You can spin the shit any way you want to. But from my standpoint, when you're in the World Series every year, you're one of the great teams of all time, especially in the era where people aren't doing that all the time. This is one of the – and the Dodgers, for all of their greatness, haven't done what the Astros have done. It's incredible. So people can bitch about the quote-unquote cheating scandal. I, for one, I think that's a bit overblown. I always felt it was a bit overblown. Cause, I mean, for me, it's sort of like with steroids. Okay, you can know the shit is coming, but you still got to do something. Like – you know, you could take the roids, but you still got to do it. And so I just feel like there is a need to discredit teams that come from nowhere, because I don't know that the Boston Red Sox, well, that's probably a bad example because many people hate the Red Sox, but another team that people really like pops up, the Giants. I don't think the Giants would have gotten that kind of vitriol because they've won World Series and people just kind of like them. Or the Cardinals. I don't think the Cardinals would have gotten that. Or the Cubs. Mm-hmm. I don't think the Cubs would have gotten that. But since the fucking Astros are just a team that nobody saw coming, nobody predicted anything good for, and they win, well, shit, there has to be a reason that they won. It couldn't be because they're actually just better than everybody. They had to have some other fucking thing that helped them win.
You know what it is, Marcus? Hoes just be mad, dog. That's all it is. Hoes mad. Hoes is mad. There's a t-shirt that I have to buy, even though it's like $25, and I shouldn't be spending $25 for a t-shirt. Somebody in Houston made t-shirts, and it just says simply, Hoes mad. Because hoes out there be mad. I got to find something here on my phone. And I want to play it, and hopefully it comes through. So you know how they do when a team wins a championship, they will send out a reporter or reporters into the street at their great peril to get some reaction from the folks who are celebrating their team winning a championship. This one young man, Astros partisan, was interviewed and asked a simple question. And I'm going to try and find it here and play it. Asked a simple question, about what do you think about people who say the Astros cheated? And this young man, who I found on Twitter and followed him and told him, if you ever out in the Bay, hook me up. And whatever you drink and smoke is on me. Because as far as I'm concerned, this young man is a true Houstonian and a Houston hero. So I'm going to see if I can play this here real quick. It's my man on live TV. My man on live TV got it off his chest. I have watched that video at least four dozen times, and I am not exaggerating. Hoes just be mad, Marcus. Hoes mad.
That's sweet. That's what I like about sports, dude. It's so fun. That's sweet.
Let's move on to pop culture. What you got for us in the pop culture world?
Wait a minute. I did want to mention something else.
Oh, yeah.
Kyrie Irving.
Oh, that's this fucking guy.
Kyrie Irving. So, Jesus. Is his career over? Like, is
no,
it over?
No. It's over if he wants it to be over. If he doesn't want to play basketball and he wants to be a professional martyr. But is Kyrie Irving done playing basketball if he still desires? Absolutely not. His skill set, while it might not be a skill set that either one of us really appreciate, his skill set is desired by a lot of teams. So if he still wants to play, no, Kyrie, no, he's not done. He's not done at all. He's going to finish out the season with the Nets. I think his career with the Nets is about to come to an end, but his basketball career, no, man. Mm-mm. Especially after Nike dropped him. You got to make that money somehow.
I don't know. I thought about it. I've gone back and forth about my thoughts on Kyrie. I don't think his career is over, but it wouldn't surprise me if a team didn't pick him up. And I'll tell you why. Because for me, this thing with this dumbass documentary, to me, this is just icing on the Kyrie cake. Like for basically the last 6-7 years, this dude has been nothing but trouble. Every franchise he's gone to. And on top of that, his teams don't win. When he's on the team, they don't win. And that's a really big deal. A guy who can score 25 points a game and his teams don't win until he fucking leaves. That's a big deal. And I'm trying to
but think about a team like, oh, let's say the Chicago Bulls.
Yeah.
Could they use his talents? Absolutely.
Sure.
Could they? Yeah. Would they desire his talents? I mean, I'm assuming here, but I would think so. Would a strong-willed organization like Miami, would they look at Kyrie and go, yeah, you know what? We'll take a flyer. I don't know. What is it going to cost to get him? You know,
Miami wouldn't take him. Miami would not pick up Kyrie Irving. There's not a chance that Pat Riley would ever take Kyrie Irving. I would bet my life on it. And that ownership group, no. They don't want that kind of drama. And with the way Pat Riley runs his button-up ship, nope. he ain't taking up Kyrie. I can't see that happening.
What if they say, okay, you know what? We run a tight ship around here. We got Jimmy Butler, who's the alpha. We got the strong organization where we're not going to let you get away with no bullshit. We could really use this. I mean, I'm spitballing here. We can really use this skill set on the court. I could see Miami saying we're strong enough to handle him. He won't go back to Boston. He won't go back to the Warriors wouldn't want him. I'm just spitballing teams here. Could he go to Cleveland, a young Cleveland team? Would that be something that they would do? I don't know. My point is that there's 30 teams in the NBA. There's too many teams out there that need and desire his services for us to unequivocally say that Kyrie Irving is done playing basketball. Or he's not wanted by the NBA at large.
I don't think that his career is over. I just think that his options are very limited.
Oh, okay. Yeah. That's very fair. Sure. Yes.
Put it this way, if it was my team, I would not want that mess on my squad. In spite of his 25 points a game.
Depends on the squad though, man. I bet you the Houston Rockets would take him.
Would they?
Yeah.
Would they?
They're horrible.
But would they? But that's what I'm saying. What would he do? Maybe box office.
This just popped into my head. I guarantee you the Lakers would take him.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well.
Man, they're 2-8. The Lakers is cheeks, dog. I just watched them play last night. The Lakers is garbage.
Oh, they're hella bad.
Yeah. They take him in a minute.
Oh, man. I don't know. What is Kyrie going to do? There's a big Jewish community in Hollywood. I don't know, dude. I mean, yeah, it wouldn't shock me, I guess, if he went to the Lakers. I feel like there was a greater possibility of that happening, something like that happening before the season, before all the other stuff. But here's what Kyrie has shown me. He's shown me that he is not a guy who gives a fuck about his team. And I don't know if I want that kind of toxicity on my squad.
Well, yeah, but you don't, understandably. But if you're a general manager that's trying to win, or if you're an owner that's trying to put butts in seats,
yeah,
then your personal feelings take a back seat to, can this guy help us achieve whatever the desired goal is, just to help us be a better basketball team or to help us be more relevant, you know, amongst our local sports community. So well, everything you're saying makes sense is that, yeah, you find his basketball skills and definitely his politics, if you will, you find those to be abhorrent. But there are people out there who either A, don't find his skills or his documentary selections to be abhorrent, and they need him to reach, you know, some sort of end that is desirable to them.
I'll tell you, I've thought about all the primary scenarios that people bring in players, right? You bring in players for basically one of two reasons, because they're going to help your team win or because people are going to come and watch them play. Mm-hmm. I can't really say that I feel like Kyrie is offering anybody either of those right now. Maybe when all this stuff blows over, but if you bring him to your team, are the fans going to want to come and see this and support this dude?
I guarantee you, if Kyrie Irving, in this hypothetical situation,
yeah,
if Kyrie Irving were to become a Los Angeles Laker right now, not only are they a better team, people will come to see them play in LA because they're a better team.
What would be Kyrie's, the parameters of Kyrie's attendance on the team? What would he have to do? What would he have to be?
Shut the fuck up.
Yeah, see, he can't do that. He can't do it. He's proven that he can't do it. He has to say stupid shit. But I will say this. In spite of all of that, I personally find Kyrie incredibly interesting. And I was just thinking about the players who I just think these guys are interesting. Just a little thought, a thought exercise. And I actually think that Kyrie, and I thought about a few, Kyrie, Durant, Draymond, James Harden, Ja Morant, and the Joker. I feel like I would really love to sit down and have conversations with those dudes. They seem like really interesting. Klay Thompson, really interesting person.
Steph
is not that interesting. He's kind of a boring dude.
The last three I'll give you. I'll give you Ja because I don't know a lot about him. I will give you the Joker because where he came from and where he is right now are two complete. It's just it's wild to think about, you know, his literal journey and his physical journey well.
Yes.
And who was the other one? Not Steph, not Klay. Klay, I find to be an interesting person because I'd love to know what goes on in that brain because it is an interesting brain. Mm-hmm. But Kyrie, James Harden, Kevin Durant, I think those dudes are about as deep as a Petri dish. I used to have somewhat of a fascination with Kevin Durant, but just curious what goes on in his mind. But I just think he's just a dude that's just flailing around. And there's nothing wrong with that at all. I think that his flailing around looking for some meaning is being, in my estimation, and I could be wrong, this is just my opinion, but in my estimation, his flailing around is being mistaken for, well, he's just a guy that's just on a journey. Like, no, I think he's a dude that's just looking for an identity.
Yeah.
And he just happens to be a grown man. And that's kind of weird that as a grown man, you still haven't figured out that, hey, man, just be you. You don't need to be following your dumbass friend to go play basketball with him. So all of a sudden, you know, that shine you had on the court is no longer there. And people are because I question his decision making fully. Durant with what in the world would make you think going with Kyrie Irving would be the smart thing to do? Like, I genuinely question his decision making, man.
Yeah.
And not necessarily his intelligence. But I question his decision making. When that tells me, yo, man, you ain't as deep as people think you are. You think you are.
With Durant, my fascination with Durant is really rooted in kind of his upbringing and this. There's a definite need for validation. And I would love to know where that stems from. Because for typically.
Yeah, but he ain't gonna tell you.
Well, but that's what I'm saying. Like, I would love to have a conversation because I think that, you know, with the right people, he has, if I'm going to have a conversation with someone and they're going to give me like real honest answers to questions, these would be the guys. And I think this dude is in constant search of validation, constant search for love and acceptance. And it's interesting to me that a man so revered, so talented, so pretty much beloved by everybody, in spite of the fact that people think he's kind of an odd duck, but I mean, he's still a guy that most people really love. He doesn't seem to feel like people care about him. And I find those people interesting. Like, why? Because you have all these things. Why? Because all the things you seek, they seem to be there. So there's something missing from your interpersonal relationships with other human beings that's not feeding your soul enough where you feel like you need to get validation by it. I need to lead my own team and all this other. Oh, I need to be thought of as in the same category as LeBron James and all that type of stuff. Or I need to be responding to people on Twitter.
I guess I'm just bored by it now because it's been out there for so long. I'm just bored by his constant need for validation. I used to wonder, same as you, like, hey man, you didn't.
Yeah.
You haven't won. You are currently winning. Why are you battling people on Twitter? Why are you engaging in that space? I'm bored by that now. It's behavior that I just scratch my head at, and I'm not intellectually curious enough anymore about his behavior in that regard to be like, hey man, why are you doing that? I'm bored by Draymond's hyper aggressive bullshit. I'm bored by it. The punch for me was the last straw. Because I'm like, that's sucker shit, man. That's just what you did. And then the way you tried to spin it, for lack of a better way, that's sucker shit, dog. I'm bored by him and how he gets down. I'm bored by James Harden, sort of, you know, his misanthropic act and you know, I don't care. I'm bored by that shit.
Who are the players that you would find fascinating and interesting? You'd want to speak with. They're gonna give you an honest conversation.
Because you don't know a lot about him. I think that, you know, I believe still waters run deep. And that's Steph fair. Steph is a fairly unflappable guy, but you'll see flashes of like, okay. there's something under the surface that, you know, when you get a glimpse at it, he looks and behaves completely different than the guy you normally get. I think LeBron is an obvious answer because, you know, there's something. There's also that need and desire to be loved, similar to Kevin Durant's, but yeah. He uses that in a totally different way. Ja Morant, I just don't know enough about, so I'm curious about him. But those are the only three names. Is there anybody
else? Well, you know what interests me. That's it. What interests me about Ja is he comes off like he's kind of this hardcore, almost a hood kind of dude, but he's not that at all. And so,
he's doing the Chris Webber.
Well, so that's kind. I mean, that's kind of what,
if you know, you know.
You know, you know. and that, why do you think he was so in love with Jaylen?
Right.
Let's be real. But those kinds of cats really interest me because I always feel like, you know, if this is really you, cool. But eventually the facade falls and you have to be who you are. Mm-hmm. And if you're working and you're doing all this stuff just to fit in, which I understand because many of us had to do it or did it. And especially when you're a kid or you're a teenager and you're 16, 17, 18, 19, I get it, but I'm always interested in those folks who literally like put that act on as if that's where they came from, because he ain't that guy.
Yeah, but you know what that is though. That is you live in this basketball world that is hyper masculine, that is urban.
Yeah.
That is hey man, be hard or cats going they gonna come at you.
Yeah.
And if that's not you, it is almost vital that you at least wear some of that armor just to survive.
Yeah.
Because if you don't, you are looking, you're fighting an uphill battle. It's like black dudes who play big time baseball.
Yeah.
Whether when you start talking college baseball and then when you get into professional baseball, especially in Major League Baseball, you know, if you're too black, or you're thought of as too black, whatever that is, that's a problem. It really is. And these black players, these black American players, some of them, you know, they try to, it's the best way to put it. Yeah. They try to tamp down the blackness so they don't, you know, so they don't seem too aggressive or they don't seem too outside the norm. And that's a horrible thing to have to do.
Yeah, man.
You know, like I said, just it's a horrible thing to have to do to I got to pretend to be street, pretend to be hood. So I can, you know, I can go along to get along. That's just, as you said, that's just life, man. That's just kind of what you have to do as a black man.
And it's actually kind of one of the interesting things about Steph. And it says a lot about him as a man that he never went down that road.
Yep.
He came from privilege. He knows he came from privilege. People gave him shit about it. And let's be real about it. A lot of folks resent the fact that he comes from privilege.
100%. 100%. And all he did to them was just give them buckets.
Yep.
You got a problem with how I grew up. You got a problem that my mama and daddy were top flight collegiate athletes.
Mm-hmm.
And I came from a good home. Well, then you got a problem with these buckets. And that's why I would be interested to, because I know it's there. I know on good authority that seeds below Steph's surface.
Yep.
That people see him. You know, we talk about light-skinned gangsters. Yep. Go back to the Quality Hand catalog, and you will see the light-skinned gangster episode.
Yep.
But I know for a fact that you know, beneath Steph's exterior, there is that people think I'm soft. because I'm light skinned.
Yep.
I came from privilege, you know, with his dad being a basketball player. I came from a good home and a good family. People think shit is sweet. People think shit is soft. Yep. Well, you finna get these buckets and you finna get this generational talent. Mm-hmm. I find that to be fascinating.
Yeah. I mean, Klay Thompson, another guy,
Same thing.
Very similar. And he is a, you want to talk about light-skinned gangster? Y'all better leave Klay Thompson alone.
Oh man, we might have to have a conversation about Klay. Let's not do it until after the All-Star break. Let's see if he gets better. But the Klay Thompson we're watching right now, still in this very early goings of this NBA season, this ain't the same dude. But I don't want to talk about that right now because
We definitely will have to get into that.
We will have to get into it. And hopefully when we get into it, we can look back here at the early portion of the season and go, remember when Klay was struggling? Because right now, dog, he's struggling. It's flat out. He's just struggling.
I'm giving him the benefit of the doubt because typically I guess it takes a year or two to get the stuff together.
Absolutely.
So.
Absolutely. That doesn't make it any less difficult to watch, though.
It's hard. It's hard to watch.
Yeah. Pop culture, what you got?
Well, you know, I've been waiting for this a long time. I don't know about you, but I'm big on the Marvel films.
Oh, yeah.
And for me, this is Wakanda weekend, baby. I'm about to get my Panther on this weekend, brother. I can't wait. Let me tell you something, Rod. I've watched the trailer for Wakanda Forever, Black Panther 2. I've watched this trailer so many times. It is burned into my retinas. I've watched this thing so many times. And I've teared up at least 5 or 6 times. I cannot wait. It's been a long time since I've felt so anticipatory towards a motion picture. I can't wait. I'm just hoping that I'm not fucking disappointed.
So Ryan Coogler is directing this one, right?
Yep.
He understands that he has been entrusted with something that amongst, and not to be exclusionary here, but I want to bring up a group of people who have very discerning tastes when it comes to this. Ryan Coogler knows he can't let black folk down.
Nope.
Okay. Now, clearly, it's not just black people who watch Marvel movies. It's not just Marvel people who black people who watch Marvel movies. It's not just black people who love Black Panther, all right? There are people all around the world who love Black Panther.
Yes,
but specifically, when you're talking about black people, when you're talking about black Americans, which, of course, Ryan Coogler is one, he knows full well he cannot mess this up. And I have full faith that he's not going to mess it up. And the early returns, the early reviews have all come back positive. And he knew from the day, he knew that Chadwick Boseman was dealing with a terminal disease. He knew that this was going to be something that was going to be difficult, but he had to get it right. And I, without seeing the movie, because it's not out yet as we tape it, I know he got it right. I know he got it right because he had to.
He's got to get it right, Rod. I'm so juiced to see this thing. The reviews I've read have been mostly positive. There have been a couple of folks who complained about the runtime, et cetera, et cetera. You know, the other thing I like about Ryan is of all the Marvel directors, he seems to be the one who is most connected to the material itself. And what I mean by that is it doesn't seem like it's just a job or just a story he's telling.
Mm-hmm.
He's really connected to this material. When I watched Panther and I saw that shit shot in Oakland, I almost wet my pants. I'm like, wait a minute, he shot it in the town. Mm-hmm. Holy Moses. And then it seems to me that he's giving the same sort of care to the character of Namor.
Mm-hmm.
And giving him this sort of Latino background, his native background. And from what I'm hearing is he took the same care with that culture that he did with the black culture in Panther. So I'm really, really excited to see this. Also heard somebody say that Angela Bassett could be the very first actor in a Marvel film to get an Oscar nomination. So that that should be interesting. I've heard two people say that. I read two articles that said that she could get an Oscar nom, which would be shocking because honestly, I thought Josh Brolin should have gotten nominated for Thanos. Being real.
Yeah, and you know, as we know, comedies and you know, big budget flicks, especially comic book movies, they don't generally get any love from the Academy. So yeah, it, I mean, my gosh, if that happened to Angela Bassett and you know she won, ooh, that would be absolutely incredible because she has a 100% approval rating as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, man,
Miss Angela Bassett, absolutely. She now is in auntie stage.
Yes, sir.
but you know, back in the day, I mean, man, Angela Bassett.
Yes, sir.
What a wonderful, wonderful actress, and never met her, but by all accounts, an absolutely wonderful. Wonderful woman. So yeah, Black Panther, definitely excited to see that. I got to catch up on my Marvel movies though. I like to watch them sequentially. I like to watch them in order because there is a flow to them. I still haven't seen the latest Spider-Man, and I know that came out a year ago.
Oh damn, you got to check that out.
I got to check that out, and I got to check out the Doctor Strange, and I know that those two have some sort of interconnectivity.
Yep,
so all the Marvel movies do. The standalone movies, and I would think that there's going to be some connection from the latest Doctor Strange movie, the Multiverse of Madness, if I'm remembering correctly,
yep,
into Black Panther on some level. So that's going to keep me from seeing Black Panther in the theaters this weekend because I got to catch up with the other ones. But yeah, I'm glad the Marvel franchise is still kicking post Avengers, I knew I was missing a movie. I'm sure you could hear the halting way I was talking. It. I was trying to think and talk at the same time. The Thor, Love and Thunder. Haven't seen that one.
Yeah, yeah. So that one.
Yeah. So counting Black Panther, I'm four movies behind. So I need to get my ass off my shoulders and get back to watching Marvel movies like I did during the pandemic.
The interesting thing about the Marvel films is that, at least in my household, they are the most uniting films in the family.
Oh, yeah.
Like, we all have the stuff that we like to watch, but the Marvel movies, each and every one of us, we will get together, everybody in the family will get together, and all other prejudices are put aside to sit down and watch those movies. They really are like kind of a fun family thing to do.
And that's why they are important to Disney, because they are a multi-billion dollar moneymaker.
Yes, sir.
That's just, I mean, you can't go wrong with a Marvel movie. You absolutely cannot.
Hey, you like stand-up. You like me. You love a good stand-up.
Most certainly do.
I don't know if you've had the chance, but there are a couple of comics who I just love them. I love them. And I feel like if you're a comedy fan, if you're a stand-up fan, you know who they are, and you probably love them too. But like, they're not super mainstream, but Dion Cole and Neil Brennan are just
two of my favorites.
Amazing. And so I heard the news that D Cole has a new Netflix special coming soon. So I can't wait for that shit. Everyone appears, he don't miss. But Neil Brennan has a new one out right now on Netflix. That is brilliant. It is brilliant.
So is he doing a regular stand-up, or is it similar to the one he put out before?
Three mics?
With three mics, yes.
Yeah, it's similar to that.
Okay.
And I'll say this about Neil is, and one of the reasons that I like him so much is that, and he talked about it himself, he started as a writer. He was always a writer.
Mm-hmm.
And he got into stand-up basically because writing gigs dried up. So he literally got into stand-up in his mid-30s and started doing this shit. And so his stand-up, whether he wants to or not, they still have this sort of one-man show quality to him. And this latest one on Netflix, it is so good and so deep. Really deep shit. I just think this guy is brilliant, and it would behoove some company, some production company, to let this guy write another show for them or a movie or something, because he's got so much brilliance in his head. The way he thinks about things, his perspective. I just, damn, dude, I didn't think about it. You know how a good comic makes you go, shit, I didn't even think about it that way.
The best comics do, yeah.
He is so good at it, Rod. He is so good at it. If you have Netflix, if you don't know who Neil Brennan is, he wrote the Chappelle Show.
Half-Baked.
He wrote Half-Baked, a movie, you know this story, he still thinks it's trash. And Dave thinks it's trash. But I'm like, you guys are insane. That movie's brilliant. I don't know what's wrong with y'all.
I wish they loved Half-Baked as much as we love Half-Baked.
Seriously, dude. I'm like, you guys are crazy. But I just think he's just such a masterful writer. And he's another guy who I'd really like to sit and spend some time with and have a conversation with.
100%.
When I was managing the Punchline, he came there. And you learn very quickly that he is an introvert. He does not really like any. He's kind of a germaphobe too, so he's not the friendliest dude. He's not the most social guy. But when you understand those things about him, you kind of get it. And when you watch this special, you really understand. Okay, this dude is really, really wounded, and he's in search of something. He's in search of sort of self-love. It's a really fascinating journey about the things that go through his head. I think it's called Blocks, Neil Brennan Blocks. I think that's what it's called. If you like stand-up, if you like any kind of laughter, check out this. This is going to make you think.
Neil Brennan has talked very openly, very publicly about his struggles with depression.
Mm-hmm.
So when he did that, I'm like, oh, that answers a lot of questions about some of the things he said and some of the things that that he's done. But yeah, I'll definitely check it out. Like I said, I'm an absolute fan. I dig his style of comedy. And, you know, if he wants to, share more of himself, I'm more than willing to listen. I'm that big of a fan of his work.
Yeah, I mean, the end, it got, I don't want to give too much of it away, but it really gets really deep and dark and kind of melancholy. But you respect it because this dude is basically being an open book.
Mm-hmm.
He said, these are the things that are in my head. And I'm like, wow, this has got to get an Emmy. It's got to.
Let's get to some randomness as we wrap this bad boy up. What you got?
Twitter is a dumpster fire, dude.
Well, it's always been a dumpster fire.
It's a dumpster fire in New York City at 2 o'clock in the morning with homeless people. It's bad. It is bad.
And the fire is definitely burning more intensely these days now that Space Boy is taking over.
Jesus Christ.
You know, I mean, fires tend to burn a little hotter when you shovel $44 billion worth of money into it.
We may have even gotten into this before. I've never thought of Elon Musk as a brilliant guy. I don't think he's particularly smart. I think he's one of these rich dudes who kind of, well, we know he kind of strong-armed his way into Tesla, and then he got that co-founder title, but he didn't do shit with Tesla. He didn't start it. He didn't invent it. None of that stuff. Tesla was around before he got there. And though, so this is kind of his thing. He strong-arms his way into these companies. He takes over them. But Tesla's going to be dead. Like, Tesla's got big problems because of Twitter. And I don't know how much you're following this story, but because when Elon Musk took over Twitter and Musk decided, oh, now we're going to be the bastion of free speech, you can say the N-word.
Mm-hmm.
Well, all the fucking sponsors were going, okay, we're going to exit stage left. And you can keep this shit. And Elon was like, wait a minute, this is wrong. These sponsors are trying to hold us hostage with their wokeness. Like, no, dude, motherfuckers don't want their brand tied to some bullshit. So because of that, and because they've lost all this money from sponsorships, Elon Musk has had to sell off a bunch of Tesla stock to fund his Twitter ownership.
Oh, no.
And it's going to be more and more. Either it's going to get to the point where he has to say, fuck it, sell Twitter at a colossal loss to somebody, or he's going to have to keep selling off that Tesla stock and lose at Tesla. Because let's face it, this dude fucking bought Twitter as an impulse buy. It was an impulse buy. The motherfucker didn't think twice about it. And you realize with the way he's managing Twitter now, everything he does is on impulse. There's nothing thought out. The whole idea of we're going to make people pay to get blue check marks, What the fuck are you talking about? Why would you do that? Well, we're going to have a white verification mark and a blue check mark means blah, blah. You're dumb. And now all these celebrities are leaving Twitter, which essentially is what, whether he wants to admit it or not, that's what propped Twitter up, was the fact that all the celebrities were on there. That's why the brands were there.
Yeah, celebrities and media outlets. Yeah, you go there for news and you go there to be able to interact with famous people.
Exactly. So now that you've managed to alienate the very people who keep that piece of shit afloat, you can forget it. This thing is a dumpster fire. My God.
I told you, man. I told you he's going to run it into the ground.
You were not wrong.
I've said it before and I'll say it again. I refuse to be scared of stupid people. Now, I understand that when you have enough stupid people, that could be problematic. But I'm just talking individually. Mm-hmm. I refuse to be scared of Space Boy. I refuse to be scared of the former president, whose name I will not mention, because you are talking about two people in particular that have a following. Okay, yeah. They have power.
Yeah.
But those two guys in particular are weapons grade stupid. And when he took over Twitter, I'm like, he's just going to run it into the ground. Mm-hmm. That's all he's going to do. It's you know, there's this idea that, oh, he took it so he could silence journalists, or he could make disinformation, he can make that easier for that to be foisted upon the public, and that's going to threaten our democracy and all that. I'm like, I can't see that dark forest for this one big stupid tree in front of me. Is that Space Boy is just not that smart. He doesn't think long term. He doesn't think rationally. He thinks, as you just mentioned, Marcus, he thinks very and acts very irrationally. And while that irrational action, while that could be dangerous on some level, he's going to hurt himself, in my estimation, before it becomes a danger truly to the American people at large. Real G's move in silence.
Yes, sir.
And he does way too much talking. He does way too much. He so desperately wants to be loved, mm-hmm. and whatever, that his actions, he's like a child.
Yeah.
Really, he's like a child. Look at me, look at me, look at me.
Yeah.
Oh, if I ride my bike really fast and I jump off the curb and I do it with one hand, will you look at me? No, but and then he eventually hurts himself.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like I can't be scared of some dude who acts like a child and he's an adult, even if he has billions of dollars.
Yeah, the problem isn't the dumb person. The problem is the people who follow the dumb person. He has a lot of the traits that most fascist, dumb, charismatic morons have. The same thing with Trump, same thing with Musk, same thing with, you know, Kanye and Kyrie, the double K's.
Yeah, yeah.
I hate to go there, but even with a guy like Hitler, these are all people who suffer from deep-seated insecurity and a need to have people love them. And they will get that any way they can. And then once they find a way to platform themselves, they just do it, and people follow.
But here's the deal. You're right about that. But here's why I don't fear them: because they're self-destructive. They're so stupid that they don't understand how destructive they are to what they're trying to create and to themselves. So eventually, to me, their stupidity and their self-destruction is what's going to take them out of true, really gaining power status.
Yeah, I think that. Go ahead.
Go ahead. No, you go ahead.
Well, I agree with you 100%. I think they all eventually peter out. The question is, how long is it going to take for people to finally realize, oh, that the emperor has no clothes? You know how you're having a conversation with somebody, you're debating with somebody, and you debate, and then all of a sudden, in the middle of that debate, you realize, oh, shit, you're fucking stupid.
Yeah, but here's the thing. It took us maybe not this long, but it took us 6 years to realize that Donald Trump has no political power and he has no political smarts or political savvy based on what just happened with these midterms. Everything he touched, every candidate he touched turned to shit. So it took us 6 years to figure that out. With Kanye, it's a wrap for old boy.
Yeah.
It's a wrap. He can't work with nobody. he's got if he gets help and if whatever his mental situation and medication situation is, if that gets turned around, then maybe just maybe there can be a redemption arc for that guy. But the way he's moving right now,
yep,
it's a wrap for that guy. Mm-hmm. He's got nothing. He'll have his acolytes, he'll have his followers, but he's got nothing. Musk is in the process of melting down. You just mentioned the problems with Tesla in terms of that, you know, that technology is now becoming more and more ubiquitous by the day. He ain't the only electric car maker in town.
That's right.
So his downfall, and he knows this, his downfall is rapidly accelerating. And we talked about Kyrie Irving a little while ago.
Yep.
His skill set is desired, but Kyrie Irving now is not as desired and well thought of as he was 6 weeks ago.
Yep.
So eventually these guys, their unintelligence in certain areas and their lack of foresight, their lack of impulse control, eventually it's going to come back to harm them. And those guys are being harmed by all of their horrific traits right now as we speak.
Yes, sir. I could not agree with you. And I'm looking forward to seeing all these cats just taken off the board as far as puzzle pieces of life go.
They're taking themselves off the board.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. enough is enough. God damn. Although, I'm looking. We got one on the way. This cat, Ron DeSantis. He's coming up. He's going to take over. And I'm like, Jesus Christ, we can't shake these motherfuckers, man.
No, I mean, there's always going to be, you know, a group of people, one after the next, who tries to be the next king shithead. Yeah. We're never going to get rid of that. Yeah, ever.
That's true.
Ever.
I'm fascinated by the folks who fall in line with people like DeSantis and It really does come down to this viewpoint there where they just want to be social contrarians. And, someone's saying something different than what everybody else is saying. So that means that they're really smart and they're free thinkers. No, it could mean that they're just fucking stupid.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, you're going to have enough stupid people out there to follow the stupid people who have been able to amass the said following.
Yeah, brother. Yeah.
That's I mean, you know, stupid people like to be told what to do, and stupid people—they do.
Oh my God, you're right.
Stupid people love authoritarianism because that way they don't have to think. And also, stupid people like to be around other stupid people who think the same stupid things that they do. Dumb is strength.
Yeah.
Those three words right there are some of that's the realest spill you are going to get. Mm-hmm. Though dumb people with abhorrent views. If you're by yourself and you think this stuff, you really are by yourself thinking this stuff. But if you could get around thousands, or there are millions of other people who think the same stupid shit as you, all of a sudden now you as a dumb person, and dumb people know they're dumb, you as a dumb person look and go, well, look at me. I now have a tribe.
Yep.
I have a group of people I can belong to.
Yep.
But smart people just go, you know, I think what I think. I'm cool with that.
Yeah,
because they're confident that the way I go about doing it, how I view things, is the normal way to view things.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, because who in their right mind would say, I just don't think gay people should be married.
Right.
Only a stupid person would say that. But if you believe that gay people should be married, you don't have to run around telling everybody you think that. You're comfortable in the knowledge that you, as an intelligent person, believe, no matter your sexual orientation, if you choose to marry another adult who is of the same sex, then you can do that.
Right, right.
It's that easy.
It is that easy. If the smart people know, that really isn't anything that's going to affect my life, why do I give a fuck?
Right, right. Dumb people need a group of people to follow along with them because they know the shit they're thinking is wrong.
Yeah,
they know it's wrong.
Stop sweating. As my grandmom would say, go get you some business.
Yeah, man, grandparent logic. That's what we're missing nowadays. It's grandparent logic.
Real talk.
it's been another quality hang, Marcus.
Yes, sir.
We keep doing the damn thing. It is fun as always. Make sure you follow us on all the socials at Quality Hang Pod. Yes, even Elon's Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. You know the vibes. My brother, it's been a fun one as always.
Yeah, man. This is a really good one. I loved it. Loved it. Loved it.
Yes, sir. Let's do it again next week.
You got it. Let's do it.
All right, everybody. Y'all have a good one. Be good at it. That's not what I normally say. What I say, if it's not good, be
you say be good or be good at it.
Be good or be good at it. As I just wasn't good at that. See ya. Going to get lunch.